You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Corner House podcast. I'm here with my regular contributor, Andrew Willis, from the University of Salford. And today we're in a bit of a sporty mood, and we've got a Formula One, cars, and sport theme going down as we come to the release of Senna, an amazing documentary directed by a great British director, Asif Kapadia. And we're going to be talking about the film, and then we're going to talk to Asif as well. Following that, we'll have our staff recommendation and our what's on. Okay, time for this week's film focus. So, as I said, this week's film is Senna. It's a documentary all about, of course, Ayrton Senna, one of the best Formula One racing drivers. And before we get into detail about the film, Andy's going to tell us a little bit about motor racing and cinema.
You would have thought that the combination of daring, dashing drivers, exotic locations and beautiful women would have made Formula One racing the perfect backdrop for successful films. But when I was looking into it, I didn't find that many, I have to say. Maybe it's because Formula One doesn't really have a big hold in America, so they don't really understand Formula One. And with America being the centre of the Hollywood film industry, if it's not an American sport, then maybe they don't make many films about it. They have made some films about IndyCar racing, the kind of what you might see as the American equivalent. I'm sure some of the petrol heads out there might correct me on my blurring the boundaries between different kinds of motor racing. So if you think of like Days of Thunder, the Tom Cruise film, or even Talladega Nights, the Will Ferrell comedy, both of them are set around IndyCar racing. And even though people say Days of Thunder wasn't that successful, I think that's only in comparison to Tom Cruise's real big blockbusters. As far as I can tell, it did quite well at the box office. Even Paul Newman had a go at making a film about that kind of racing as well, IndyCar racing. He made a film called Winning in 1969, which was set around Indianapolis 500, one of the world's most famous motor races. And Newman was a real car nut in real life, and I think that's one of the things with these motor racing films. Often the people behind them are actually really into cars themselves. So Paul Newman was famously a big car nut, as I say, and so was Steve McQueen. And Steve McQueen also had a go at making a motor racing film in 1971. He made a film called Le Mans about the 24-hour race. I think neither the Paul Newman or the McQueen film were that successful. I think the film that everyone remembers that looks at Formula One was a film called Grand Prix, which was made in 1966, directed by John Frankenheimer, who in the 1960s was a big name. He'd made The Manchurian Candidate and Seconds, some really big and important Hollywood films. And that film was one of these big 1960s blockbusters. It was shot in Cinerama. It had multiple cameras strapped to the cars. We're used to having the driver's point of view on the TV and everything today, but I think in the 1960s that was quite a rare thing, and it used lots of split screens, which were very trendy in the 1960s. So it was a really impressive visual thing. It starred James Garner as an American racer, Yves Montand as a French racer. It had people like Toshirô Mifune, the Japanese actor, in it. So it was really looking to be a kind of global blockbuster. It was 3 hours long, and it was shot on location in places like Monaco, all the places the Formula One supporters know about. Interestingly, McQueen, who I've already mentioned, in real life, at the same time as Grand Prix was being made, he too was trying to make a big motor racing film called Day of the Champion. He was working with John Sturges, the director who'd made The Magnificent Seven with McQueen, and they were locked into a deal with the Nürburgring in Germany. And Frankenheimer had actually shot at the Nürburgring some footage for Grand Prix, but because of the deal that they then had in Germany with McQueen and Sturges, he had to hand over all the footage he shot to the other film. But in the end, Frankenheimer won out because they stopped the production of Day of the Champion, and only Grand Prix really got to the final edit and was released. So in a way, I think the John Frankenheimer film had the moral high ground there. So really, there's not that many Formula One films. There's not really that many motor racing films. I think when you think of car racing, it's maybe the non-organised car racing films that are the ones that people really remember. Death Race 2000, Cannonball Run, The Gumball Rally, all of these sort of crazy car films. And of course, my favourite, The Love Bug, starring Herbie, which I recall my dad taking me to see at the pictures in the 1960s, which has always had a place in my heart ever since. I wasn't so keen on the remake, but I still love the original, particularly when the car breaks in half and the back takes over the front. However, I will end by saying, of course, most people will know that the daddy of all car racing films, the one that's made all the money, $244 million at the global box office, is the animated Cars.
The Pixar film. Okay, well, I prefer Herbie myself, but they're both good films. Okay, so let's move on to Senna. So this is our new big release for this week. When we first started to hear about this film, we were a little bit, ooh, Ayrton Senna, Formula One, is that going to be very interesting? We were almost a little bit worried, but the hype's been kicking in. You know, the crew has done quite a lot of interviews. Everyone's getting a bit excited. Myself and Andy were lucky enough to be able to see the film very recently. So, Andy, let's start with you. What did you think?
Well, I'm not a great fan of, I seem to be saying this a lot, well, I'm not a great fan of, and I'm not a great fan of motor racing. And a lot of people had said, oh, it won't matter, you know, there's it's a really engaging film, even if you don't like motor racing, it's still got something for you. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm not so sure. However, I must admit, I was surprised at how engaging I found the film. I still had a little bit of trouble with the amount of cars going round and round and round in circles. But the actual person that came through the film, Ayrton Senna, was the story of Senna was quite an engaging story. I'm not really sure you got to see the man himself, because I think in real life, as the film shows, he seemed to play a number of different roles. And I think that kind of role-playing within the circuit of Formula One, the politics of Formula One, the behind-the-scenes shenanigans that went on before and after races, all of that came across really well and made it, I think, a much more engaging film than I thought it was going to be.
Yep, I loved it, really. I was really, really impressed. I think I didn't really know anything about Ayrton Senna. I obviously knew the basics, and I know that he's not around anymore. I'm not spoiling it for anyone by saying that. I hadn't really thought about the fact he was Brazilian or pretty much anything before watching it, but I was so engaged. The film is extremely well put together. There's a real narrative. There's a real story arc. You get really into it. I was getting quite upset at the end. I really, really just enjoyed the whole experience of watching it. It is still quite conventional, I would say. It has been put together in that way. And what perhaps is unconventional, quite groundbreaking, is the use of archive footage. So the director and the crew have really found some gems, some magnificent stuff. They got Bernie Eccleston to open up his Formula One archive. They got television archive footage from around the world. And it's pieced together so well. There's no talking heads, which, you know, I'm really fed up with documentaries, people just going on with themselves the whole time recently. So this, I thought, was a real treat because it was so cinematic. It wasn't the kind of documentary that you think, I could have seen this on television. And I've seen so many of those recently that end up in the cinema. This one was cinematic. You've got a great character. You've got supporting characters like the Alain Prost character, who, if it was a fiction film, would have been played by Alan Rickman or something. He's quite the evil baddie, but not all evil, of course. And, you know, other supplementary characters that really all come together to make a great filmic experience. We've had a lot of positive review from our preview screening as well that we've did, and surprisingly a lot of girls coming forward saying how much they enjoyed it, and a lot of people saying, I don't like Formula One, I don't really know anything, but I really enjoyed this film. Andy, what do you think about the kind of emotional impact of so much archive footage?
Well, I think that was quite interesting. I think the way that drew you in through simply the images and Senna talking himself, people talking at the time about Senna. And what I think was good, as you say, is the fact that it didn't have a kind of voice of God. Well, God's voice is there a lot because Senna was a bit of an obsessive Catholic, but there isn't no voice of God in that documentary sense telling us what we should think. So you can kind of piece together Senna and to a certain extent, I think, your own reaction to him and opinion about him. I'm not sure that it's as open as maybe the filmmakers hope, because I think working with, you know, the Ayrton Senna Foundation, they have to really present ultimately a relatively positive view of Senna. But I think it does allow you to see some of the darker side of him, to see some of the reckless side of him, and to maybe build up a slightly critical view of him. One thing I did think about the film was it did try to make Senna out to be this kind of unique Brazilian figure. And of course, I was thinking while I was watching it, well, you know, there was Emerson Fittipaldi, a very famous 1970s racing driver from Brazil. And we get a small glimpse in the film of Nelson Piquet, who makes a statement at one of the meetings. And Piquet himself, before Senna, had been world racing champion on three occasions. So I think what I wanted a bit more was a kind of wider Brazilian story and the place of motorsport and these people within Brazilian society. But you can't have everything, and the film is called Senna, so it is about Senna. And I think on its own, as it wants to be a film about Senna, then it actually works very well as such.
Okay, and A bit of a comedy question. If it was a fiction film, who would you have wanted to play Senna?
If it was a fiction film, well, maybe, I don't know, Johnny Depp?
Johnny
Depp in a hat.
In a helmet. I did ask this to the director, Asa Kapadia, at the Q&A after the preview event this week. And he was going for Gael Garcia Bernal, but then obviously knows that he's Mexican and that wouldn't go down very well. I would go for Jim Caviezel, who's not worked since Passion of the Christ. So with my executive producer hat on, he would come quite
cheap. You've not seen Outlander, the film where he plays a man from the future in a spacecraft who lands in a Viking village, have you?
No, well, nothing of note, I meant. Okay. So, Andy, who should see this film?
Well, I think, obviously, people who like motorsports will be loving this film. They'll be queuing up to see it, I would think. I do believe Corner House is the only place it's showing in Manchester, so if they're going to be queuing up anywhere, they're going to be queuing up here. I do think people who want to maybe go beyond the kind of Top Gear take on motor racing should see this film. What I did like, and I think other people would like, was the politics of it, actually looking at the way in which motor racing's run, the way in which decisions were made. So people who are interested in the kind of behind-the-scenes activities in these big multinational global industries would find it interesting as well. I think in that sense, it's much more of a political film than you might think, looking at the subject matter at first glance.
But also, at the soft end, it's a really emotional film. It's got a real impact. If you like stories of biopics about people, about their charting their success, the ups and downs, and following a very, very charismatic lead character through life, it's about ambition, but it is just have an emotional impact that I think makes it appeal to young people, to women, to a real cross-section of the audience. So I think we're going to see a very busy weekend with Senna. Okay, it's time for our quickfire round. You know the drill. Best car film.
Well, my best car film, I think, one I didn't mention in my overview because I'm getting used to this now and I was saving it for the quickfire round because I knew this would come up, is Jonathan Kaplan's film about the first ever champion woman drag racer in America called Heart Like a Wheel.
I'm going to go for The Italian Job. It was on again at the weekend, so I'm sure I wasn't the only one watching it. And now let's have best sport documentary.
Well, with all the news this week about Serbia, I've been having at home, just to show you how exciting my life is, a mini Emir Costa Rica retrospective. And as part of that, I've watched his documentary about Maradona, which is an absolutely fantastic documentary about a crazy guy made by another pretty crazy guy.
I was wondering if I could have Zidane, you know, the Douglas Gordon film. I don't know if it really fits documentary or not. If I can't have that, I'll have When We Were Kings, an obvious choice, I know. And finally, best sport fiction film, so not a documentary.
Well, for me, there's only one, This Sport in Life, Lindsay Anderson's film, starring Richard Harris about rugby league. I can watch it over and over again, and it doesn't become any less brutal. Now, if I wasn't being serious, of course, I would have picked Yesterday's Hero, starring Ian McShane as a thinly guised George Best. That would be the kitsch choice, I think.
Well, I have to put aside all those American films that come into my head, you know, Dodgeball, Field of Dreams, things like that. And I'm going to go to India, and I'm going to have Amir Khan's Amazing Lagan, which is all about cricket. And it was a very, very, very accessible Bollywood film, not too many songs, and did very well in a kind of crossover market, did very well here at Corner House, in fact. So Senna starts screening here tomorrow, Friday the 3rd of June, and check our website for the times.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Now it's time for our little What's On guide for this week. And several of you have written in requesting this, and I'm delighted to say that we'll be having some limited screenings of Apocalypse Now. So it's the reissue, of course, of Apocalypse Now. It's not the super, super long version, but the still very long version. Andy, quick, let's test ourselves. What do we know about Apocalypse Now?
Well, I know that even the short version is long.
I know it's based on a book called The Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad about a trip to the Congo, but obviously it's transposed to Vietnam during the 70s conflict.
I know it won the Golden Palm at Cannes in the same year as The Tin Drum, the Volker Schlondorf film.
Oh, yeah. It was, of course, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. That's Sophia's dad.
Yes, and the lead part originally was played by Harvey Keitel, who was given the boot, and Martin Sheen took over, and the pressure of the film was so much that Martin Sheen had a heart attack while he was shooting.
Oh yeah, in fact, the whole shooting of it was a subject of a documentary, I believe. It was such a long, arduous, everything was a problem. It took for ages. It's all coming back.
I think there was a typhoon that took away all the sets. I think it was shot in the Philippines.
Ah, you're right, it was. It was indeed the Philippines. Anyway, you all know Apocalypse Now. If you haven't seen it for a while, you should go see it on the big screen. If you've never seen it, then of course it is a must. So Apocalypse Now, selected screenings from Friday the 3rd of June. Next week, we have a special debate event that is part of our visual arts programme and also linked to the art and politics course that I've been running here. So it's called The Curating of Politics, and it's basically a big panel discussion. We've got curators, artists coming. Artists include Heath Bunting, who's really, really interesting, and several curators and academics. So check on our website for some more information about that, and you can book tickets online. And that will take place on Wednesday the 8th of June at 6:30. Also, booking now and coming up very soon, we have another director's Q&A. We know these are very popular with you. This is part of our Play It Again series, where we bring back films that you probably missed or you may have missed or you just want to see again, but they have to be recent films. So I selected a film called The Arbor, which is about another biopic in a sense, and uses archive footage, all about Andrea Dunbar, the playwright who wrote things like Rita Sue and Bob Too. It's put together actually by an artist as well, in her first directorial film, Cleo Barnard, and she'll be here to talk about the film and answer your questions afterwards. So it's a great chance to see the film if you missed it, see it again, of course, if you liked it. And again, you can go straight to the top, as they say, and speak to the director after the film. I'll be doing the Q&A, and that will be Monday the 13th of June, around 6:00. Check the website for the exact time and ticket prices. So, of course, this week we've been talking all about Senna, and I mentioned the director, Asif Kapadia. He is a young British director. This is his fourth feature. You may remember features completely different to Senna. He did a film called The Warrior. It came here, and we showed it. It's about 10 years ago, I think, now. Very, very artistic, art house, really beautiful film. And also one called Far North as well. It was set in a totally different kind of landscape, but still much more of the sort of art house genre, and got lots of kind of awards at festivals. Not necessarily the box office kind of success behind those films, but very, very critically acclaimed. So Asif Kapadia came here this week, and our AV technician Dave asked him some questions.
Hello, my name's Dave Petty, and I'm here with Asif Kapadia, the director of Senna. It's nice to have you with us.
Great to be here, thanks.
This film represents quite a significant departure from your previous work, being your first feature-length foray into documentary filmmaking. What prompted you to tackle the documentary genre with this film?
I mean, I was approached to make the film by the producer, James Gay Rees, and the writer, Manish Pandey. And I'd just come off a film shooting in the Arctic, Far North, and it was a pretty tough shoot. So when they contacted me to say, would you be interested in making a documentary about Ayrton Senna, I kind of thought through the whole process and thought, well, one, I'm a big sport fan. I love sport. And I'd always wanted to make a movie about some sportsmen. But they're quite hard to do as dramas. And actually, when they contacted me, they wanted to do it as a documentary. And straight away, I thought that's the perfect way to do it. What I didn't realise at the time was just, I knew about Senna, the racing driver. I used to watch him drive. I remember the rivalry. I was watching the Imola race live. But I didn't really know too much about the man. So the other side of it was I had a lot to learn, which is always a good thing, I think, going into a film. But then the more we looked at the material, the more we looked at the footage, the more I realised there's something really special we could do here. And weirdly enough, I think a lot of the themes of the character and a lot of his journey and a lot of the what he meant to Brazil, the crazy world and the political world of Formula One, and also his spiritual side of his personality, for me, had a lot of similarities to other films like The Warrior. So even though it's a documentary, a lot of the meaning behind it and a lot of the themes running through the story are quite similar to things that I've always been interested in.
I've read that you had access to over 15,000 hours of footage for this film, which is no mean task for anyone to sift through. However, what prompted you to focus less on the personal life of Senna and more on his driving career?
I don't know if we have. I don't know if that was the idea. The idea was not to make a film just about racing driver. The idea was to make a film about a character. So for people who are into Formula One, you see, you know, a lot of what he was famous for. I wanted the film to work also for people who've never seen a race in their life, who have no interest in the sport, and actually don't even know who he is. And that was a challenge. So we had to try and make a film about a character, actually. So the idea isn't just to focus on his driving, but to see what he means to his country and what he means to other people and what he stood for. And a lot of that was you know, him fighting corruption, him fighting the politics that infested the sport at the time. But it's all character. It's all about a man. He just happens to be a racing driver.
You can definitely see that. There's a definite story and a through line that goes through the entire film. With the film being created entirely from found footage and audio interview clips, what role did Manish Pandey, a writer for this film, have to play?
Well, Manish is the guy that was the big fan, okay? So he's read every book, he's seen every race, he knew everything. He's got this amazing knowledge and memory for detail. I'm the absolute opposite. So my job was to make it cinematic and visual, but he knew the story. So he had originally written an outline dealing with a decade of Senna, Prost, Mansell, Piquet, that era. I read this outline and we started working on it and looking at the material. And bit by bit, as scenes would come up, he'd know, well, we should focus on these eight races. And then we'd go off and we'd look at all of the material. And then invariably what would happen is we'd look in the archives and something new would come up and we'd say, well, look, this isn't actually in the outline, but what if we use this instead? Because this other scene that he's written visually doesn't exist. Because what I didn't want to do is make a film where we just had lots of voices telling you about something we couldn't show. We had to find a way to visualize everything. So the writing, the directing, the editing, the interviews, the research, all of that was happening at the same time over a 3 or 4 year period. So whenever new material would come up, we'd go away and rewrite the script. And then something would come up in the script and we'd have to find that scene because we couldn't just go out and shoot it. So we had researchers in Japan, in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, in Rio, in Paris, in Rome. And we were in Bernie Eccleston's archive. We were the first people to have access to it ourselves. So we probably saw more than 15,000 hours of material, you know, somehow on fast forward. And all of that, the whole film was really a process of elimination, trying to reduce it and taking out more to make it stronger, taking out more to make it stronger so we'd end up with a 100-minute film.
One thing that I picked up on whilst watching the film is Antonio Pinto's score, which for me adds a huge amount of drama and tension to some of the race sequences. How closely did you work with Antonio?
Antonio is amazing, he's a genius. He plays every instrument himself. And the amazing thing on this film, it happened quite a few times, but Antonio's was one of the key moments when he contacted us. He found out we were doing a film about Senna. He got his agent to ring up James, the producer, and said, look, I really want to do this film. This is Senna, this is my hero, I really want to do it. And so he was in Sao Paulo, I was in London. We didn't have the money for me to fly over there or for him to come to London. So I spoke to him on the phone and said, look, can you write some music? You've not been hired yet. I know your music. He wrote City of God, the music for City of God, Central Station, Collateral. He's brilliant. And so he went away and wrote a few cues just from his memories of Senna without having seen any of the footage of the film. And one of those cues is the main theme that you hear when he wins in Brazil for the first time at the very climax of the film. It's a beautiful, emotional piece of music. And there are a couple of other themes that he wrote before he saw anything of the film. And then what happened was we were sending the cut to him. I'd go over to Sao Paulo and we spent, you know, a couple of years working together. And his score is amazing because it provides the emotion. It's the heart of the movie in a way. And also what I love is because he's a Brazilian, he's got the feel of Brazil without it being any cliches, you know. And he's just brilliant. What a wonderful guy. And actually, just his wife just gave birth to his daughter today. So that's great.
Fantastic. Now, the film is arguably in no way a routine documentary. I think anyone who sees the film will notice the absence of talking heads, which you mentioned earlier. They're almost a fixture of any documentary these days. What were the reasons behind this editorial decision?
I'm a drama director, so my instincts are not to go and shoot interviews first. My instincts are always to look at the material and see what exists. So I just felt like I was the luckiest guy ever to be asked to make a film where there were all of these amazing rushes. All of this footage existed. And what we needed was just time to go through it, to sift through it, to create the structure and tell the story. So my instinct is, all of the films I've made before don't really feature talking heads. I don't like voiceovers. I don't like voice of God narration. I don't like stills. Now, other directors use these, you know, elements brilliantly to create movies. But for me, that would have felt like TV. And every frame of our film is originally television. So I felt we had to do something different to lift it, to elevate it into cinema. And one of those key things was to never leave the moment, always be in there. And so when you create some tension, the worst thing would be to cut to a contemporary talking head and you have to start all over again. So for my gut was, let's just stay with it. Let's just stay in the moment. Never let once you've got the audience, never let them go. You know, just see how you get to the ending. And that basically creates a very, very exciting, thrilling, emotional experience.
And finally, what are your feelings on how the film's been received so far?
So far, so good. I mean, it's been amazing. The true fans really love the film. The people who've never seen a race in their life really love it. There's something about Senna. He's so charismatic. He's what movie stars used to be. He has got something. And the difference is he actually is also a genius at doing driving. You know, he's amazing at what he does. There's no fakery in this film. You know, whatever happened, we're showing. Whatever people said is what we're showing them say. One of the greatest experiences was to be at Sundance, you know, in a country where people don't watch Formula One. Most people had never heard of him, and they didn't know the ending. And the film won the World Cinema Documentary Prize, the Audience Prize. And that was fantastic, because that was really the tester of, does the film stand up on its own 2 feet? You know, if you just showed a film in Brazil or where people are big Formula One fans, it's fantastic. But he transcended his sport, and we really hope the film can transcend the kind of niche of being a sports documentary.
Asif, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
Now it's time for our staff recommendation of the week. We're going to hear from Thomas Harold, who's our exhibitions coordinator.
Hi, so it's your last chance to see our current exhibition, New Cartographies, taking place across galleries 1, 2 and 3. It's had a really fantastic response over the past couple of months since it first opened. We've had a really great amount of visitors coming to see it, and their reaction has been quite positive. Plenty to respond to. It's a quite complex show. The artists are exploring the relationships between France and Algeria, its former colony. So it's a complicated political issue, but it's a very engaging show as well. It's a mixture of photography and video, so it's quite accessible. But also plenty to think about on a sort of deeper level. So the artists come from France, Algeria and England, so it's quite a mixed selection of emerging artists as well as more established artists. And it closes on Sunday, so don't miss your last chance to see it, because there's some excellent work on show.
Thanks, Thomas. You've got till Sunday at 6 p.m. I highly recommend New Cartographies. Make sure you don't miss it. So that's it for this week. Hope you've enjoyed our sporty feel with the film Senna. Do highly recommend this one. And I'm now off to the Venice Biennale, so I will try and take the podcast equipment with me and get some interviews, or at least views, if you like, on the artwork, and I will report back next week. Ciao.
You've been listening to the Corner House podcast.